Today from the Rita Suites in Phoenix, Arizona, you're listening to Breakthrough Thinking. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm Dave Isaac, the host of Breakthrough Thinking. And if it is the second Tuesday of each month, which it is from 2 to 3 Mountain Time, it is People and Games starring Paul Loudon all the way from Houston, Texas. Paul, how are you?
Doing all right, Dave. Thanks.
Oh, good. And where'd you go to dinner? I was always wondering that. Last night, remember we were talking about it yesterday.
You put me on the spot, and I can't remember.
It could have been the macaroni grill.
No, I ended up at the California Pizza Kitchen.
Oh, that's not bad, though.
I was going to go for sushi, but the sushi place near where I'm staying is closed on Mondays.
So oh.
I'll have to remember that.
Oh, that's not good. Well, anyway, that's not a bad place, though, so I like that. And that is very cool. I've been there many times. So, anyway, this is a great show every month, the second Tuesday of the month from 2 to 3, People and Games. And why don't you explain to any new listeners what this is about, because I find it fascinating.
Well, I mean, it's now the 21st century, and games are a huge industry. And a lot of what I've noticed is that there's sort of a divide about what people know about games. You know, I've talked with you about it, and you say, well, you know, you think of games, you think Donkey Kong and whatever. You know, and then you meet someone young, and they realize that games are this broad and varied experience. So I really wanted to create a show about games for non-gamers where we talk about the interesting things about games, the people who work on them, the people who have a passion for them, and just the different ways that games present themselves. And that's sort of what we have this week. We have a man named Davey Reedon, who's from Austin, I believe, who is the head of Galactic Cafe, and they recently released an experience on Steam called The Stanley Parable. And you know, it's categorized as a game because pretty much anything interactive you do for entertainment on a computer is categorized as a game, but a lot of people are also not really sure if that's the best way to talk about it, and it's a good example of sort of how games are changing, both the way independent authors are able to bring their own ideas to it and the way that we're realizing that games don't necessarily need to be, you know, game-y. So, Davey, do we have you there?
Yeah, hello.
Hey, Davey. How are you? This is
good.
Dave Isaac. I'm here with Paul Loudon, and welcome. You're the head of Galactic Cafe, and you designed the game, The Stanley Parable. I'd love to hear all about that. Tell us what the Galactic Cafe is, first of all.
Well, Galactic Cafe is the little company that we formed just to have some legal framework for whatever we were doing or ended up doing in the future. You know, I don't know much about the legal side of it, but I'm told that this was a good thing to have, and so it's really just the little like a little name for the people who have been working on Stanley Parable and to give us something to go by for whatever it is that we make after this.
So how did you come up with the name Galactic?
Okay,
or Galactic
it's
Cafe, something, I should say.
Something from years ago that I made up and that I thought sounded, you know, a little fitting, I guess, for like another project that I was working on, something completely separate that didn't really end up going anywhere, but I liked the name, you know, so I decided to keep that.
So for our audience, I know it's really hard to describe. You created a demo for it that shows nothing of it at all, but somehow sort of manages to express the experience. What would you call the Stanley Parable for our audience? How would you describe it loosely?
Well, you know, it's tricky because part of what I wanted to do with the game was create something that was inherently kind of impossible to describe, you know? Like, sort of as a rejection of traditional notions of genre or style or theme or tone. And certainly Stanley Parable has all of those things, but I tried to create new variants of all of those that hadn't really been seen before, or not in games so much anyway. And so there's the way that I try to describe it is as being an experience that goes out of its way to be indescribable, right? And obviously
wow.
that's very hard to talk. Well, for one thing, it sounds awfully pretentious. I can, you know, I realize that that's very easy to come off sounding, you know, like I'm totally full of myself with that. But you know, that's also part of why we created this demo, so that so that I can say to someone, if they ask me what it is, I can just say, well, just play this, right? And then you'll understand. You'll get what this thing is. I wanted to convey kind of what this style and tone is, but to not have to give away or to spoil kind of the secret playing, because as you play, it's kind of about these little gradually unfolding Easter eggs and secrets and things that surprise you and come out of nowhere and are all meant to kind of catch you off guard and to you know, bend your mind in some different direction. And so that's really the best that I've been able to come up with, you know, is to say, like, I want to surprise you, and if you want to be sold, then, hey, we've made this thing for you to go and try out and see whether or not it's your cup of tea.
So maybe the best way to talk about it, because, I mean, obviously you can talk about how it controls. It controls as a first-person game, and that puts a lot of imagery into people's minds immediately, and then you say it's story-heavy, and then they start thinking about it. What about maybe influences going into it? Because that might give people a clue. I remember reading an article from you where you said that that games were sort of your media, that maybe if you'd grown up watching more movies, you might have done this as a movie instead kind of thing. So maybe talk about what led you to making this game the way it is.
Well, you know, my favorite parts is of games that I played when I was growing up were always, like almost always, the parts of the games that were really special to me were where the combat stopped, right? You know, because you'd have games like Half-Life or Metal Gear Solid or Zelda, where, you know, there were these big epic adventures where you'd go off and you'd fight a lot of people and you'd do a lot of stuff, but then sometimes the game would, like, all the combat would stop and there'd be some really interesting little, like, story interaction, you know, where you're, like, a part of the world and doing something, but it's not about fighting or winning, where it was just about, interacting with an environment, right? Or those things, it was like, okay, I wanted to see if I can take that and make more of a full game out of it. And there were games that had been doing that, you know, at the time that I started working on this, like Dear Esther and Radiator. But even now, today, you know, that was many years ago, and even just this year, we've seen many games come out that capture that kind of experience, which I think is great just for gaming in general.
Yeah, I will say that one thing your game sort of strongly reminded me of was the beginning of Half-Life 1, where you have that feeling of you sort of know who you are, and I know in your game the narrator introduces roughly who you are. His game features a narrator who I'll probably bring up a little later as a very interesting part of it. But in Half-Life, you know who you are just from the manual or whatever you've read. And then you're sort of thrown into a very calm opening where you get to see the setting and everything. And it reminded me very much of that feeling you have at the beginning of Half-Life where you're wondering, so what is this place? What's going on here? Before it just turns into running around and shooting stuff. But yours, you never get to a point where it changes what it is. It's always just sort of a sense of curiosity.
Mm-hmm. Which is what I like, right?
Yeah. So one of the big things, obviously, is that if we talk too much about the game, it'll spoil things. But as I said, it has a narrator, and that's something that people
must
discover within
seconds.
It's
really frustrating so far for people who don't know about the game.
Yeah. Now, I will say, one of the things I noticed about the game, to me, is that it really my personal comparison mentally was with the narrator from the old Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy BBC miniseries, because the sense of humor in your game very much sort of had it's a humorous game, and it had a very sort of wry, dry sense of humor at times, the nature of the game did. And the game, throughout the game, you have a narrator who is describing your actions and then responding to them if you are as you experience the game. And so the game is very much about the interaction between the player and the narrator, the story and the storyteller, as it is. And so I was just wondering, you know, what made you decide to use a narrator in game? This is something that you almost never seen a game, a narratorial voice. So what made you decide that this was the direction you went in?
Well, interestingly, when I first wrote the game or started writing it, I had never read or seen Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy or anything. And actually, the Kevin, who does the voice acting, he only just recently told me that he was channeling Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy in his recordings of it. That was his, like, starting point, his inspiration. I wasn't even familiar with that, and so the influence was there, but it was completely not intentional on my part. But I think I've always just really enjoyed the use of narrators in all sorts of media, you know, like when a really good, compelling, especially like a really compelling, unreliable narrator, you know, is used in books and movies. That was always really special to me. And I think that was part of what started it, you know, was just that that was just what I really liked. And when I started working with Source Engine, which is the tool set that I used to make it, I wasn't very good at it. And the only thing I really had knew how to do was make, like, empty hallways and sound. And so I knew that it would then be, like, it was fairly simple to just create a narrator just to put in there to drive the action, technically. So it came out of restraints, you know, partly. Like, that was one of the only options that I had to create something compelling was to use sound. And so that interest and that technical limitation kind of lined up really well in that way.
Well, Davey, let's take a quick break. You can hold on for us for a while. Mm-hmm. This sounds very interesting.
Sure.
Great, and of course, this is Breakthrough Thinking and People and Games, starring Paul Alden. I'm Dave Isaac. We have Davey Reedon on the phone, head of Galactic Cafe, designing a game called The Stanley Parable. And Davey, before we go to the break here, I want to ask two questions that you can contemplate, and we'll go over these after the break. Is there a goal of the game, or what would the goal be, and what would players of the game come away with? What did you want them to come away with? And we'll be right back.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Weidenauer, Heinten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Weidenauer, Heinten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
At Birenbaum & Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Hello, I'm Jessica Olson, and I'm here to introduce you to someone whose job it is to stand together with you at the worst of times. Life throws us unexpected curveballs, including losing loved ones, caretaking, troubled retirements, job losses, and legal settlements. Meet certified financial planner Larry Moscat, who pioneered crisis financial counseling. With a background as a clinical psychology practitioner, Larry has helped numerous people see through their crises to a brighter financial future. Larry?
Thank you, Jessica. At our firm, RII Advisors in North Scottsdale, we know terrible times don't usually last, but the effects of anxiety-infused financial decisions can last a lifetime. For 30 years, our prime goal has been to introduce freedom from fear and a feeling of financial security for our clients. We then move forward with safety and best-case outcome results when it comes to the financial decisions made during the worst of times.
To learn more, log on to www.RIIAdvisors.com. That's RIIAdvisors.com for information on how to get help. Once again, that's RIIAdvisors.com for financial counseling during life's most challenging times.
And welcome back again. You are listening to Breakthrough Thinking live at the Regis Suites in Phoenix, Arizona. And, of course, the second Tuesday of each month from 2 to 3, it is People and Games, starring Paul Loudon all the way from Houston, Texas. And on the line we have Davey Reedon, head of Galactic Cafe, designer of the game The Stanley Parable. And, Davey, we talked about, I asked a question, actually a two-parter. Is there a goal of the game, or what is the goal, and what would players of the game come away with? How did you envision this, and has there been any surprises that you didn't think of that players did come away with?
Oh, sure. I mean, this takes kind of an understanding of the structure of the game, which is that we allow the player to explore. And then throw something surprising at them, try to catch them off guard, try to just, poke them somewhere that just makes them slightly uneasy or sets them in some weird mindset, and then rewind and then do it again but a different way. You let them go in some other direction and see what the game, has to say to them over there, and then rewind and let them do it again. And so there's many, many chunks of game that people can experience in many different orders. Some people might only experience certain bits and not others. Very rarely I don't even know of anyone who's necessarily seen everything in the game. It's possible, but there's really no way for me to know, just because it's so complex and bizarre and this thing twists and turns in so many directions. And so people, will see this piece and this piece and this piece, and they'll come to a conclusion about what's going on based on those specific things that they saw. And even someone else who saw those same three things might have seen them in a different order, and so they would have then come to a different conclusion about what the meaning behind those chunks was, right? And
now
even
I was going to ask you, the way you just described it is like, they go through some circumstance, and then the next time they go through something similar but different, but have elements of the same. Have you ever seen the movie Groundhog Day?
Oh yeah, right.
Is there any element of that? I found that concept really interesting.
Having not played the game, you're very close to hitting it on the head.
Is that right? Because I thought, that's what it reminded me of, and I love that movie
right.
where. They went through this pattern, and every day, waking up the same the same mm-hmm. morning until he elevated his skill level, he couldn't get past the day. Is there any relationship there?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know,
interesting.
Like in theme, you know, thematically, you're very close to kind of what is happening in Stanley Parable, which is that the idea of repetition, right? You know, the idea of an individual being stuck inside of something inherently like confining to a certain thing that keeps happening over and over. And in Stanley Parable, as well as in Groundhog Day, what that is, what the thing is never made explicit. You know, like I know that in an early version of Groundhog Day, as they were developing it, there was at one point in the script, it was explained that there was like a shaman that put a spell on Bill Murray's character, that was why he keeps, you know, the day keeps happening over and over. And I think as soon as that would have, if they had done that, it would have completely killed the magic, you know, because the magic of Groundhog Day is that you don't know why it's happening to him.
Exactly.
And it's the same thing in Stanley Parable, that, you know, there's never an explanation given as to why this is happening to this character. The big difference between Stanley and Groundhog Day is that Groundhog Day gives the character resolution within the film, right? And within Stanley Parable, we never give Stanley real closure, right? And this goes to your two questions from earlier, which, I mean, to me are really the same question, which is, okay, why am I here then? Why did I go through this? Why would I have experienced all of this over and over? Because there is no closure. So what am I getting out of it? And every single person who plays it gets to create that meaning for themselves. You know, we're not giving you an answer. We're not giving you a way. We're not, you know, it's very tough to do that, right? For the player to have to create the meaning that ties all those things together, right? And in Groundhog Day, what he eventually achieves is freedom, right? He's free. He can move on. And I think that that is there in Stanley as well, but it's for the player to achieve, right? It's for the person who plays it to experience this, to come to some meaning, to make all of these like repetitions cohesive and come together in a way that they achieve personal freedom, right? Which is not as clear and easy to define and understand as it is even in Groundhog Day, it's never explicit why he breaks free of that. But, you know, with Stanley, we take it quite a bit further to really make it the player's responsibility to do that work, basically.
Yeah, I have to say that, you know, one thing I found about it was just sometimes there's so much ambiguity in it. Sometimes, as you said, the nature of the game is cyclic. You find yourself back at the beginning again and again. And there were times where I wasn't even sure if I really was back at the beginning or if it was a continuation of what was going on right before I ended up back there because of the nature of it. It leaves so much up to the player to figure out for themselves. I think the only thing I took away from the game with any absolute certainty was that Stanley has a very, very nice break room.
There are a few constants, and one is that the break room is absolutely lovely.
But so I wanted to move on a little bit from the topic of the game for the moment and talk about, a topic of the nature of the game and talk about the other side of it, you and the original version of the Stanley Parable as a mod and moving on from that to Kickstarter and eventually releasing it on Steam. So for people out there who don't know what a mod is, the Stanley Parable started as what could essentially be considered an add-on for another game in a way. Was it actually a mod or was it standalone back then and just running on the Source engine?
No, it was a mod back then.
Okay, I just wanted to double check because I remembered it being it, but that was a while ago for me. So, it's additional files that you can download and run within an existing game. So, you know, mods might be extra levels or extra weapons. In this case, it was a completely separate story with different rules and different systems to an extent within another game. So the Stanley Parable started as something that was just a downloadable add-on for another game. And then after that, you decided to make it standalone. How long after the original release did you decide to make it standalone? And what was the real process with that? You eventually ended up Kickstarting it. But what were you doing before Kickstarter? Oh, you didn't Kickstart?
We did not. No, we did not Kickstart it. No.
Okay, I'm confused there. I thought did you crowdfund it somehow, or?
What we did was we put the game on Greenlight, which is it's a voting process for games to go onto Steam, which is like the largest distributor for video games on the internet. It's like the equivalent of iTunes for music or, you know, something like that. And so being on Steam is, means a lot of exposure generally. And so we put the game up there to get votes and to gain traction, and that's how we eventually got on Steam. But that was several months. That was maybe a year after we started working on it. And, you know, the game took 2 years in total to make, and it really changed over time what I thought it was going to be. You know, like at the very beginning, I just thought, oh, we'll just... So, like, someone came to me just emailed me and said, hey, let me help make this look nicer, right? And so I was like, okay, so we'll make it look nicer. And then we started talking about it, and we started saying, oh, well, what if we made it, what if we added more content? What if we did new, you know, put more things in there? And then we started saying, oh, we could change this old content in some way. And then we said, oh, we could make this, like, bigger change. And then every, like, few months we would kind of reimagine what it was we wanted to do with the thing. And it just snowballed, honestly. It just kept growing and growing and growing. And then at a certain point we just had to say, we had to force it to stop. We were like, this could easily just keep going forever, you know, if we don't actively cut it off. And so that's what we did. And just about 2 years after the original mod came out, we launched it on Steam.
So how has the general response been? I know that Stanley Parable is pretty far outside the normal type of game. Mm-hmm. But I know that there have been a lot of, Let's Players playing it on YouTube. I heard you did a slightly special edition of the demo for the Game Grumps. I don't know if you did it for anyone else. I guess Steam Train, not Game Grumps. Anyway, but how has the general response been? Do you feel like, selling it, you're getting more than you expected, less than you expected, about right on? Do you think that... you know, you're really seeing a positive response to your game here. I mean, I know getting through Greenlight itself is a bit of a harrowing process with the sheer amount of people who are trying to get their games on Steam. But beyond that, how does it feel like it's going to you?
It's been, like, exponentially more than we expected. I mean, just by, like, several orders of magnitude. You know, this was, like, We weren't even sure if anyone would buy this at all. Like, for a long time, we were just going to give it away for free, you know, because, like, the whole point of the game is that you can't talk about it, right? Like, just this conversation that we've had so far, we've literally said nothing about what the game actually is. You know, we keep, like, talking around it and being like, oh, you can't spoil it, but it's about, like, life and whatever, you know? Like, that's a really tough sell, you know? That is, like, how are we going to put that on a store and charge money for that? That's brutal. So it took me a long time before I was finally convinced that we could even put, like, a dollar, like, a price tag on it, right? Like, That was a really tough decision to make. There was a game called 30 Flights of Loving that's a very short, like, 15-minute experience with no gameplay or anything, and that sold for, like, $5 and did quite well. So I was like, okay, well, our game takes, like, 2 to 3 hours. I'll bet we could charge 10 or 15 bucks for it and maybe get away with that. And we kind of found that we found an interesting footing in our marketing where we tried to create a lot of content that was in the style of the game without actually saying anything about it. So, like, we released a bunch of trailers, and one of them had a lot of jokes in it, and it used the narrator to be very humorous, but didn't say anything about the game. We did another one where we had someone pretend to play the game, but it wasn't actually the game, and he just kept failing, and the narrator would then talk about how he was failing to even try to play the game. So it was this very weird, esoteric thing. Again, no actual gameplay. We made a demo that was a completely separate, standalone experience, no content from the main game, and but all about trying to convey the style and tone of the game, right? So all of these things were in the service of, can we talk about what this is without actually talking about it? Right, because I wanted, you know, to be able to sell it. Right, I would. It'd be nice to make money to, you know, sustain myself to be able to live a lifestyle, and the idea of doing that with a game that you literally cannot talk about is, it kind of goes against all traditional notions of marketing, right? But the reality, you know, of what actually happened is, after we did all of this marketing and after we talked it up a lot and, you know, spent several years kind of slowly releasing information about it, we finally put it on sale and we sold it for $15, and it has sold very, very well, like significantly better than we thought it would. And it's been very encouraging for me as far as, you know, the idea that people actually are interested in this kind of experience, you know, that people... That there is clearly a real desire for this very difficult and confusing and contradictory work, you know, that's not just about indulging a fantasy or recreating some already understood trope, you know, and people were willing to put their money behind it. And
sounds like you have a marketing, you have an audience, which is really nice. And Davey, let's take a quick break right now. Stay with us. I have a couple more comments and questions, as well as Paul does as well. And you can contemplate this while we're on the break. As you're describing this, my description would be, it sounds like a process, not a destination. And that's interesting. Sort of smell the roses as you go. Wake up, smell the coffee, forget the destination, live life as a journey, and when we come back, we'll continue our discussion with Davey Reedon, head of Galactic Cafe, designer of the Stanley Parable. We'll be right back.
At Beerenbaum and Spien PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633. Or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beerenbaum and Spien works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Reidenauer, Heinzen & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Reidenauer, Heinten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Hello, I'm Jessica Olson, and I'm here to introduce you to someone whose job it is to stand together with you at the worst of times. Life throws us unexpected curveballs, including losing loved ones, caretaking, troubled retirements, job losses, and legal settlements. Meet certified financial planner Larry Moscat, who pioneered crisis financial counseling. With a background as a clinical psychology practitioner, Larry has helped numerous people see through their crises to a brighter financial future. Larry?
Thank you, Jessica. At our firm, RII Advisors in North Scottsdale, we know terrible times don't usually last, but the effects of anxiety-infused financial decisions can last a lifetime. For 30 years, our prime goal has been to introduce freedom from fear and a feeling of financial security for our clients. We then move forward with safety and best-case outcome results when it comes to the financial decisions made during the worst of times.
To learn more, log on to www.RIIAdvisors.com. That's RIIAdvisors.com for information on how to get help. Once again, that's RIIAdvisors.com for financial counseling during life's most challenging times.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking live at the Regis Suites in Phoenix, Arizona. And if it is the second Tuesday of each month from 2 to 3, it is People and Games starring Paul Loudon all the way from Houston, Texas. We have Davey Breeden, head of Galactic Cafe, designer of the Stanley Parable, on the line. And when we went on our last break, Davey, I was talking about the elements, the way it's the description, the way we were talking about this so far, the Stanley Parable, it sounded like a process versus a destination. There's not an end. That's how you described somewhat Groundhog Day, that it got resolved, but maybe not in your game. The other comment I want to make is you talked about the marketing of it. You weren't sure if you could sell this because it was hard to describe it, but I think the curiosity element, Paul mentioned it, a sense of curiosity when you play this game, that could lead to really good marketing. After all, is that what happened? Because you said you were somewhat surprised of the sales that you've made above your expectations. Maybe the curiosity and the lack of description helped market it. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. That ended up being the entire crux of our marketing campaign. And, I always knew that there were people out there who wanted that. I just didn't know how many, and it turned out that there were more than I thought, right? Which is great, right? The more people who are really interested in, like, discovering something bizarre and unknown and weird, but are really curious to know more, I was very happy, to find out that that's the case.
Well, that's, to me, I think the element of surprise there, it might break people's boredom in life, and I think that's maybe partly why people play games. It gives them a little bit of sense of curiosity, maybe control, and maybe a way to do things in life that through a game that they couldn't do through life.
Well, and it's easy to be cynical about it and to look at the biggest selling games of every year, games that make billions of dollars, which might just be like retreaded rehashed versions of what came out last year, you know, with no, like, real critical thought or design put into it. Like, it's easy to be cynical about that and look at how much money those games make and go, like, oh, that's what everyone wants. They want the mindless stuff, right? And I think that's true to some extent, but the more content that's out there that pushes back against that and that just explores weird and interesting new spaces and that actually, like, has the potential to become viable, like, I think that's really good for video game culture, you know?
It sounds like it. I'm sort of curious, what was your passion? How did you become a game designer? I mean, you're just following your passion, what you really love. Where did you play a lot of games when you were younger? Do you remember the point you wanted to become a game designer?
I played a lot of games when I was younger, and I for a long time I always thought that I would end up making games. And then at one point, I think when I was like in high school, and I kind of went, video games aren't like. That's not a very professional thing to go into making, right? Like, I had some notion that, like, because I was so interested in storytelling, but games tended to focus more on mechanics and action, and I said, well, gosh, maybe I should just go into film, which is, you know, all about story. And I tried. I went to film school. You know, it seemed more legitimate. It seemed more of like a, you know, something for like normal contributing members of society. And I just found that I didn't like film as much as I liked games. You know, there were a lot of other people there who liked film way more than I did, you know. And I really enjoyed film. I had a great time with it, but... I needed that reference point to realize, like, oh, wait, no, what I actually really love is games, right? And the thing I actually feel like I can make a real contribution to is games. Also partly because there's just so much we don't know about games, you know? Like, in film, it takes something really, really out there these days for a film to make people go, whoa, I've never seen that before, right? Like, even the crazier stuff still tends to have some reference point, you know, some pretty clear inspiration. And with games, it's so much easier to make something that just nobody has ever seen before, you know? Like, there's so much more room for people to be really surprised in games, I think, which is why I was so called to it and said, okay, well, I've got to try and make something.
I will say that your game, in some ways, actually took me back to some very, very early games, like Zork or Colossal Cave Adventure, the so-called interactive fiction games, where you were talking about the storytelling, and that's sort of where we kind of lost a lot of our storytelling is when we moved from interactive fiction to the adventure games to the action games, and we sort of left a lot of it behind. And so you're sort of calling me back to that, or the old choose-your-own-adventure novels, where in choose-your-own-adventure novels, you're running through a plot, and it'll say, okay, if you decide to open the door, go to page 17. If you want to listen to the door, go to page 46. And then you'd flip to a different page, and it would say, you know, well, you opened the door, and there was a raging fire on the other side, and you're dead. Go back to the start. Well, your game isn't necessarily as lethal as the old choose-your-own-adventure novels were. It sort of reminded me of that in the sense of you keep running through the same story, making different decisions and seeing different things happen. So while your game, you know, is very definitely something we haven't really seen in game design, to me it really has sort of a nostalgic feeling as well. And I thought that, you know, I'm trying to remember, I remember that you were in your early mid-20s, so these may be a little bit earlier than you. I'm only 30, so not that far back, but they were old for me, so.
And I remember Donkey Kong.
But go ahead first.
I was going to say, I just think it's pretty remarkable that even, like, a small change, like, you know, in a game that you can take a heritage like that and twist it in some pretty subtle ways and make something that has such a radically different effect or that's such a completely different experience. You know, I like that I like how deep the potential is for those kinds of surprises still in game design.
And that's sort of how I feel, that, that game design is kind of the convergence of a lot of our storytelling tools and our media tools right now. You know, it includes music, sound, voice acting, you know, visual representation stuff. And I think that's one of the exciting things about the Stanley Parable as well, is that as games go, I hesitate to call it the easiest because it's not a game about challenge in any way, but it is extremely playable in the sense that it's not a game about winning or losing. So anyone who's listening to the show now and is interested in it, you can go and get the demo for free on Steam, and you'll find Steam if you search for Steam. And you can get the game for, you know, I'm not sure what it's priced at right now.
$15 right now.
$15, yeah. So, but you can get the game for fairly cheap, and it's the kind of game that anyone can play, and as long as you have a sense of humor, you'll probably enjoy it. But I wanted to move on, Davey, to ask you a little bit about now and possibly going forward, what you're playing. You know, are you playing any games right now from maybe either more major games or other indie developers that, that you feel are interesting and exciting and might influence, you know, what you might do going forward?
Well, gosh, sure. You know, I tend to be a fan of, like, smaller games that try that explore or experiment narratively or mechanically in some weird way that I hadn't thought about before. I love little kind of thought-provoking experiences like that, like Device 6, which is a fascinating iPhone game that just came out recently. It's all about, like, scrolling through a text, like, story, but it's bizarre. That makes it sound really boring, but it's thrilling, right? It's really fascinating. I've never seen anything like that before. This year I've been really enjoying Kentucky Route Zero, and I really enjoyed Gone Home, which came out recently, and Papers, Please is a game that's all about, like, working at a customs booth, inspecting personal documents by people who are trying to get through a border patrol checkpoint. And again, this sounds like it could be so boring, and it's fascinating because of how much is done with that very simple mechanic that turns it from being something very boring into something absolutely captivating. You know, it's taken in all of these very interesting directions, narratively and mechanically, that create this experience overall that's very tough to play. It's very difficult, but it just the act of playing it is just you experience, like, every emotion. You know, fear and excitement and dread and thrill and it's amazing. It's really incredible.
Yeah, We've really seen, you know, this explosive growth of indie games, especially with Kickstarter and Greenlight, you know, really giving them the opportunity to get out there. Now there's the Humble Store as well, which was announced on Monday, which is offering indie developers another market to sell their games in. Yeah, games like we talked about Papers, Please on a show a couple months back.
Yeah.
You mentioned it. And Kentucky Route Zero, that's one that I've been – it's been on my mind to bring up that and maybe Cart Life. But
yeah,
it's really exciting to
really
see
special these, as well.
These kinds of games, you know, showing up. So I was wondering, you know, moving forward, does Galactic Cafe have any immediate plans, or are you just sort of seeing how this goes for now, or do you have any ideas sort of percolating in the back of your head that you want to hint at or talk about just to, you know, let people know what you might have in mind?
Well, you know, we've got some ideas, but the more important thing for me is that we're surprised by what happens. You know, and this was very much the case with Stanley Parable, where we started out doing something, and it became something else entirely that we couldn't have really predicted. And that's really what I want us to do, is to have to take on something new that we hadn't thought about or don't yet understand, you know, and to have to try to make sense out of it. To me, that's way more interesting than just knowing, here's what we're going to do. We're going to make this, and then, like, setting out to make it, right? And, we've got, a few ideas for some specific things, but it's more like, okay, that's a good direction to start walking, but I'm more interested in being able to make, and this goes to what you were saying before about the journey and not the destination, I'm more interested in being able to make smart decisions along the way at key moments than to get to some prescribed destination, right? Because I know that
it sounds very much like an organic process for you.
It is, absolutely. It's an evolution, right? And it's about dealing with what is right in front of you, at the moment. And that's the philosophy. And so in that sense, I want us to be good at developing, at our development, rather than being good at making games, right? I want us to be good at learning how to make games, right? And hopefully good games will emerge as a result of that, but our goal is not good games. It's knowing how to make things and how to do that well and be healthy.
Now, Davey does, and then only a few minutes left, but as you said you were surprised with the sales, but as you go forward, and I understand, the journey for sure and making good decisions, like you said, making good games, but are you getting more into the business aspect? Is this because of the success of sales? Does that get you more into traditional business, or are you still just take it as it comes and say, hey, that was great, but we're still going to keep our style of surprise alive?
Well, it's very interesting because the way that we handled the business of Stanley Parable was a combination of knowing what the spirit of the thing was that we wanted for this game, but simultaneously going to every smart person that I knew who had some experience with the business of this and hearing every perspective and opinion on what other people thought and felt about this thing. And so I was constantly incorporating advice from people who were much smarter and more experienced than I about how to handle the business into our practice of actually translating this thing into the market, right? And by the end of it, when it actually paid off and it worked, I felt pretty good about that, wow, I did it, in a way. Like we figured out how to actually do that. It gave me a kind of confidence in the business side of it. Not that I'm like a business genius now or anything, but, we figured out a business model that works for us, right? And that it would have to be different for every single person who comes to it, right? Like, that's what I learned, is that because we were able to marry good business sense with a style that was uniquely our own, we really hit a market and an audience that responded very strongly to that, And I was never interested just in business before, but I gotta say, I'm growing more and more interested in business practice as it relates to, specifically to a business practice that speaks to your particular creative style, right? I'm growing really fascinated by that, and I don't want to focus too much on the business side of it. I know that it's very easy to get sucked up into it, and I have. I mean, right after launch, I became very stressed out with all of the business stuff and thinking too much about the numbers and everything. It can be a really, really anxious and stress-inducing game to play. But I've also been really fascinated by how we can do something with business that I think no one's ever really done before, and it's an interesting way to try to maintain sustainability for our work, right? Like, if I can learn that skill of how to make that business side of it work while not compromising the creative side of it, it just makes it that much more likely that the whole team can be sustainable, that we can have the money to keep doing this.
No doubt. And you actually did what great business people do. You surrounded yourself with great people and by asking all these questions. And so you actually did a strategy that only the best of the best do.
And that's what it became, was knowing myself well enough and really listening, right, to what people had to say. And the skill of listening is an entire skill, you know, that I've had to learn, and that in many ways, but specifically in understanding the business, has been absolutely at the core of being able to do good work.
That is great. And Davey Reedon, head of Galactic Cafe, designer of the Stanley Parable, thank you so much for joining People and Games. I would love to have you back. Is there any contact information you want to give out so people either can view your game or get in touch with you?
Oh, for sure. Well, you know, you can the game. There's a link to download the game and the free demo if you go to stanleyparable.com. And if you are inclined to tweeting and twittering, my Twitter handle is HelloCakeBread.
HelloCakeBread. I like that. That is very cool. Davey Reedon, thank you so much. We'll have you on again and appreciate you coming on.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been wonderful.
You're more than welcome. Paul, that was interesting. I have great curiosity. I want to play this game.
I recommend it.
Yeah. I'm going to get right on tonight, and I think I'm going to try it. And anyway, this is Breakthrough Thinking, of course, and People and Games, starring Paul Loudon. Stay up right next, 3 o'clock, Understanding Autism, Part 2, What is Autism and What It Is Not, starring Paul Loudon and Kimberly Isaac. We'll be right back.